Welcome to the Moms of Tweens and Teens podcast. If some days you doubt yourself and you don't know what you're doing, if you've ugly cried alone in your bedroom because you felt like you're failing, well, I just want you to know you're not alone and you have come to the right place. Raising tweens and teens in today's world is not easy, and I'm on a mission to equip you to love well and to raise emotionally healthy, happy tweens and teens that thrive. I believe that moms are heroes, and we have the power to transform our family and to impact future generations. If you are looking for answers, encouragement, and to become more of the mom and the woman that you want to be, welcome. I'm Cheryl Gould, and I am so glad that you're here. Hey, everybody, welcome to today's episode. And if you are dealing with a tween or teen that is challenging, maybe they're disrespectful, or you're exhausted because they're arguing constantly, or they have explosive emotions and you're not sure what you should do, you're going to want to listen to today's episode. It's real, it's raw, and it's honest. But before we dive into our show, I just want to make sure that you have signed up for our 3-day live free training, and it's called Building a Strong Relationship with Your Tween and Teen, the crash course on conflict, communication, and connection. And it starts tomorrow, February 3rd at 12 noon Central Standard Time. And each day, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, we meet from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. And if you sign up and you can't come, no problem, you'll get a replay. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, go on over to our website, momsoftweensandteens.com. So on to introducing our guest today. She's especially special because she is a COO here at Moms of Tweens and Teens, and she is behind the scenes, and she's just awesome. I mean, she is the reason that we have grown and just been able to reach all of you moms, and I am extremely grateful for her. And she is also a ninja mom of a teen boy. And she struggled. I mean, she has gone through a lot of challenges with him, dealing with emotional outbursts and disrespect and the mood swings and feeling like she was failing. And she shares her story and her journey through and what she has done that has turned the Titanic around and helped to build a great relationship with her son. So I'm honored to introduce you to Jen Keel and really looking forward to you hearing her experience and all the wisdom that she has to share.
I want to start with, what are three words that you would use to describe having a teen boy?
The three words I would use would be exhausting, surprising, and rewarding, I think would be the three.
So tell us, what is exhausting?
Well, I was going to say that the three words to describe parenting a teenage boy were exhausting, exhausting, and exhausting. So if that says anything, but what is exhausting is having to be on top of everything all the time. He's exhausting in that he never stops asking for things, doing things I don't want him to do. You know, it's like, stop doing this one thing, whether it's like, stop running in circles around the living room while I'm trying to chill out, and saying stop 500 times. It's whether it's like, come to dinner, stop playing your video game, and saying, please come to dinner 500 times. Or, you know, the other piece is, it's exhausting just being the parent of a 14-year-old because you're driving everywhere and you're organizing things and you are dealing with emotions. And so I don't think there's any aspect as wonderful as the other pieces are of parenting a 14-year-old boy that are not exhausting. I don't think there's any aspect of parenting a teenager period that is not exhausting, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Just waking up in the morning.
Yeah. So. And that is true. And having a teen boy is different from having a teen girl. And as
yes.
a mom, I know my son is now 26, but understanding a teen boy, it's so different when you're a mom trying to get it because we are wired differently.
Oh, absolutely. And as a woman mom, it really, I mean, part of the problems I've had too is watching him interact with other boys. I'm like, don't do that. Don't say that. That's not what a friend does. That's not how a friend acts. But boys are different. Boys do communicate differently. And I'm so thankful for a community that reminds me of that because like when they are roughhousing, I like want to go hide because it's either that or I'm going to get in there and stop them and don't, you know, but that's what they do. And so that's part of it too. It's funny how letting go can be exhausting, you know, right?
Not just, jumping in there can be exhausting.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You're like having a war in your head.
Controlling ourselves is exhausting.
Right.
Yeah. So that leads me to ask what's surprising. You use the word surprising. That's an interesting word.
Well, it's once again, I think being the mom of a boy is surprising because I did not have to go through a male version of puberty, right? So I didn't have to, I mean, when he started to discover his body was really just, I mean, it was disgusting to be honest. Like I could not handle all of that. Like he's very open about his burgeoning sexuality, let's say. So he wanted to talk about it. He wanted to talk about what was happening with his body hair and he'd want, you know, hey mom, you know, other guys smell and I don't smell yet. And that's so cool. And so there was all these pieces also around that, that were very surprising. I think that the other thing too, was just in general, watching the decision-making process has been surprising, but I think it's mostly that aspect of being a female person and watching how a male person becomes a person, how a male baby child moves into being a person and how that really is different and you can't understand it. And having a sister who only has a daughter, we've watched that happen side by side. And it is not the same. And it is a surprise. And you cannot anticipate what's going to happen next at all. You might think you can, but you cannot.
They're going through so many transitions, but so are we because we're having to adapt. And I know moms talk a lot about that, that their son used to cuddle with them and sit with them on the couch. And then all of a sudden they start pulling away. And what do you do
when
that's happening? It's hard.
Right.
And then they're not a girl, they're a boy. And so just having to let go of that and allow that process to happen.
Exactly. They want to be a man.
I know. And it's hard. Yep.
Yeah, it is. Oh, don't even get me started.
Anybody relating out there? Okay, you said it's rewarding. What's rewarding?
Oh my gosh. I think that no matter like all that stuff, right? The rewarding part is seeing them make good decisions, is, you know, stepping back and you're just worried as you send them out in the world because you know what they're like at home. Maybe they're disrespectful and mean, or they don't listen or any of that stuff. But then you send them out into the world and you see them make the right decision or good decisions. You see them have empathy for somebody or something. They'll come to you and talk to you about something that's going on in their lives. And you actually have an ability to connect with them at a completely different level than you did when they were 10 and 8 and 7. You know, they start to become people and you can have a conversation. And like, we go to movies together now that I would never have gone to with him before. Obviously he's 14 and we can go to a movie and have a discussion about the movie. And I still feel sad when I project into the future that he's going to leave me. But there's like every step of the way, there is something also that's better than the last time. So as much as I struggle and we fight and there's a lot of push and pull and chaos, there's also all of this really wonderful stuff in there too. And it's rewarding because you see all of the, you see the fruition of what you've been working on, what you've been trying to make happen. You've been trying to create this peace, this communication, this openness, and you see it happening. You see it working.
Well, I think that's great, a great jumping in point, because I know that there's a lot of moms that are listening that are struggling and their sons aren't expressing. Isaiah's very expressive. He communicates well and he talks a lot about what's going on with his body and puberty. And then there's other boys who are not talking at all and they're pulling away. But you have gone through some really significant challenges and behavioral challenges as well. Can you share about the disrespect that you've gone through and all of those things, the mood things? And
yeah, I mean, I would say that like our major challenges have definitely been disrespect, which with him manifested itself in anger, extreme anger, and also just, and still the anger piece still is there. It's taken, it's down a, like 100 notches, but it manifested itself when it first started as real severe anger and also meanness. And I'm sure all moms can relate to that. I mean, when he is mad and he doesn't get what he wants, he is so mean and it is so hard not to take that personally. He has a lot of anxiety. He has dyslexia and he knows he shouldn't let that define him, but he still does. And he has a lot of anxiety. His sensory processing disorder actually kind of built that in, this anxiousness about not knowing what to expect. That's really difficult for him, where he doesn't know how something's going to go. He doesn't want to do it, even though he's a very gregarious kid. He's always, if you meet him, he's just this, his personality is on fire. But try and get him to go to the first of a class or the first of a meeting, and he shuts down. So he has a lot of issues with anxiety that, you know, have definitely caused a lot of challenges for us. He also has technology stuff, you know, obviously that's, those have been struggles for us, and it's a work in progress. The technology piece, we have, I think, really a good plan in place, but that doesn't mean that I, you know, I turn it on and leave it. It's constantly a moving piece. So I'd say that those are our primary challenges that we're dealing with.
You said that he shuts down. When he shuts down, what does that look like?
He starts just trying to avoid things, avoid situations. He's, you know, he'll like avoid the conversation. He will try and move to something else, you know, change the subject. If you're trying to talk about, okay, hey, we're going to start this new class that you're so excited about, you've asked me to sign you up for it forever. And he's excited, excited, excited. And then I'm like, okay, so tomorrow. And he's like, you know what? I think I have a lot of homework, you know? And so he'll deflect. And then either he will get really angry at me and say he never said he wanted to do something. So it will then start being anger and he will blame everything on me. It will just become all about me. You know, you did this, you pushed me, I didn't want to, you said I had to, you know, and it gets really hard to not then get into a push and pull with him where I'm like, no, you said you wanted to, I did it because of you, you know. I have to shut up, and I know I do as much as I can, but I can't always. It gets into this where I'm the bad guy. And then he just shuts down. Yeah. And then he just shuts down. And he doesn't shut down as in I'm so quiet, I'm so scared, but as in I'm giving you the silent treatment because you suck. You did this to me. So now I'm not even going to talk to you. So don't try. And he'll either put in earbuds, which we kind of have a rule that you don't get to do that in the car, but he'll either put in earbuds or he just literally won't talk to me. And he'll say things. If I try and say something, he's like, what don't you understand about don't talk to me? He has no problem just being like, I said, shut up. And I know in my mind, I should just be quiet, but sometimes I can't. But that's what happens to him when he's anxious, is that he moves to anger when he's anxious.
That is something just to note. When your kid is expressing a lot of anger, that's oftentimes that is anxiety. Dealing with, I know you shared, disrespect, and he shuts down and getting into those power struggles. What have you done about that? What's worked?
You know, the disrespect piece started really bad. It really did. Because first of all, he went from being this wonderful, loving, sweet child who didn't, he's always been a wild child. So it's not like he did everything I wanted, but being angry with me for everything and expressing it in a very, very negative way. I tried to do as much as I could on my own, but then I realized I needed help. And I think that that's a really big piece, is that people need to understand that they can't do this alone. I was reticent because also now we have to talk about that anxiety piece again, just trying to get Isaiah in the door to go see anybody I knew was going to be a problem. But I knew that we were going to be, to put it mildly, we were going to be screwed if we didn't deal with it, because he was getting bigger and bigger and angrier and angrier. And he was starting to get physical about it because he could. He was realizing he was a big kid. He'd get in my face. And I said, I need to get help. And we started on a journey with just a very nice, she was a social worker. It was not like, oh my gosh, he needs a psychiatrist and he needs to get on medication, because people said that to me. They were like, well, maybe he's depressed and maybe he's this. And I'm thinking, or maybe he's just a boy, you know, mm-hmm. And maybe this is his way where he's expressing whatever it is and he's being disrespectful. So we made a lot of changes. We had help, but we also learned in other ways. But what we did that worked the best was listening. That was the hardest piece, because when your child is being disrespectful, the first thing you want to do is be like, you can't talk to me that way. You can't do that. You can't. And at no point are you just listening to what they're saying, because I know I was thinking, when I was his age, I never would have talked to my parents that way. When I was his age, if I had done this, this would have happened. So I'm thinking, right, like, what did I do wrong? How did I wind up with a kid like this? And I mean, before I knew better, I would say things like that to him. I would say, I raised you right. Why is it that you're acting this way? What did I do? And I would play the like poor me card, you know? Oh, what did I do to deserve this? How come you're treating me this way? You know, at no point though was I saying, okay, so you're mad. I never just allowed him to be angry and to express it and talk about it. So it always escalated really fast. It was, I needed to get in there right away. So if I didn't catch it early on, it would escalate. And we learned a lot of tools. We learned tools about him recognizing when he was starting to feel angry and vocalizing it and saying things like, I'm starting to get angry now. You know, I mean, that's easy enough to say, you think, but when it started, he was like 11, 12, you know, when it started.
When I met
mad. Yeah. When you met me, he was just mad and he didn't know why. So it took a long time. I hate thinking that a parent might feel like, okay, I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, then I'm doing something else, because I have been working on it for 3 years. And it's never going to be perfected. He is still disrespectful sometimes, but it's been a journey of learning how to listen to him, being okay when he tells me he hates me. He's adopted and he will say, I wish you never took me from my real mother. You know, I mean, imagine that's like a stake through your heart, right? You took me from my real mother. You know, it's learning how to not react, to not engage, to say, I don't deserve to be talked to this way, so I'm going to walk away. Not, I don't deserve to be talked to this way, so I'm going to lecture you right now. And there are times he will follow me and just keep doing it. And I would say, I'm going in my room and I'm locking the door. Mm-hmm. And he would stand outside the door and he would say, you better listen to me. You better listen to me. And I would just be like, okay, all right, I hear you. I mean, literally, it was like just a broken record in a sense, because I had to say those words to keep myself from saying other words. I had to just say, okay, I hear you. Okay. All right. Okay. You know, that was just me all the time. And then when he would get past it, if we could diffuse it without some humongous issue, he would actually talk to me about what happened afterwards. And he would apologize. I mean, that, you know, when we talk a little bit about that rewarding piece, right? And that's, and even the surprising piece, it was like, if we could get through it together, and I mean, together as in I got to be a punching bag for an hour, but he worked through whatever was happening. On the other end, he would say, Mom, I am so sorry. I did not mean any of those things that I said. I love you. I don't think you're fat. I don't wish I was with, because he would, I mean, he would take pot shots. It was not like he was just like, I hate you. I hate you. He would say like, you're fat, you're ugly, you're trash. I mean, it was, it's bad. I want to say that out loud, because I think moms feel so alone. They think, my kid is the only one who talks to me that way. Nobody else's kid talks that way. But you don't know that, because nobody talks about it. He did talk to me that way, and I would just have to take it. But afterwards, he would apologize, and he would apologize. He would remember everything he said, and he would apologize for every single word. And then he would say, I was just mad because, and whatever it was that he was mad about, we would get the opportunity to talk about them. And he would, and I would be able to say, okay, you're mad that I took your phone away. And he would say, yeah, you know, you took my phone away and I really wanted to talk to my friends. And I would say, okay, well, why do you think I took your phone away? You know, and I would just start asking questions to try and get him to get, to see where we started. Where did this start? Because it's never, the thing that started it wasn't me taking his phone away, right? The thing that started it was whatever he did that made me decide to take the phone away. But they always focus on that consequence. They don't focus on what got them to the consequence. So by talking, we would talk it through. And it would take forever and it would be exhausting. And I have to tell you guys, I mean, there would be sometimes 4 hours. This would be 4 hours of my life just gone. Here's the exhausting piece, part of the exhausting piece. 4 hours of my life of first having this angry tyrant and then having to have the conversation because he wanted to apologize and then needed to understand. And sometimes I would have to let him apologize to me for an hour. He would be like, I'm so sorry. And he couldn't let it go. He just needed to tell me. So, you know, it all comes down to the same thing, because it all comes down to listening. There's nothing, there's no other piece to it. It literally is just listening, even when you don't want to. It has been a really, really long, hard journey. Hard. I will 100% say it has been really hard. He has changed so much that other people tell me that they see it. It's not just me. He has learned so much about his own emotions and what happens inside of him and why he's feeling the way he's feeling. And this is not 100% on me. This is also on having somebody for him to talk to that was not me, who could say to him, okay, so what does this emotion feel like? He's not going to talk to me about that stuff. He's not going to, you know, we can't have those conversations. He's going to be like, Mom, I'm not talking to you about this, you know? But finding somebody and advocating for your child. Okay. We went through 3 therapists before I found the right therapist for him. I didn't make him stick with somebody he said he didn't like. He's not going to talk. Your child is not going to talk to somebody they don't like. So you have to let them be part of that decision. The other piece of that, which I started to mention, is that the first time we got to the therapist's office, he wouldn't get out of the car. He was not doing it. You have to find a therapist that's okay with that too. Because I had one therapist say, well, if he doesn't get out of the car, you're getting charged for that appointment, you know? And I'm like, okay, we're not coming to see you. Because I said, this is what I anticipate. Because we had been down that road with other things. First time he went to his tutor, he wouldn't get out of the car. When we had to go, he had to go get an EKG, he wouldn't get out of the car. When he doesn't know what to expect and he's feeling anxious, that I can expect that. So I found a therapist who said, that's okay, let him sit in the car. You know what? I'll just come out and I'll talk to him. And if he doesn't roll down the window, I'll just stand right next to the car. You know, when that happens, when you have somebody who will do that, then your child will start to trust them and understand, okay, this person is not going to push me. This person's going to meet me where I am. And then we'll see, you know, and he would say, okay, I'll go in, but you have to come with me. So there was always these steps. And some people say, well, I'm not going to bargain with my child, but I think that you have to understand where they're coming from. If they're coming from a place of anxiety, then you can't just let them flounder. You have to support them. And he was coming from that place. So I helped him take the baby steps that it took to get in the door. And once he got in the door, it was me going in with him. And then it was slowly, hey, you know what? I have to make a phone call. Do you mind if I step out for a little while? I think we need to pay really close attention to our kids. We have to. And we have to see how we can help them and how we can support them, because that's the only way they make it through to the other side. Our kids cannot do it alone. Our job is to advocate for them and to help them understand themselves. I mean, you talk a lot about it, Cheryl, and I learned a lot about it through the therapist. This emotional intelligence piece is humongous. It also helps them empathize with other kids too, to see they can, Isaiah will often identify things in other kids that he feels before he'll admit it himself. He'll be able to say that kid is obviously feeling anxious about that, or see what he's doing right there. I think he doesn't really want to do this very much. And it's been so important, but I just want to stress again, this is not a quick fix. It's not even in 6 months, things will be better. This is almost like a lifetime. And actually, you know, people don't know how personal our relationship is, Cheryl, but you said that to Isaiah on the phone the other day when he was on speakerphone. You said, like, you know, this is it. You're going to be you're going to do this for the rest of your life, because it's going to keep you being like strong and healthy. And it's not a quick fix. And I have to stress to parents, like, if you're going to start with anything, start by listening, start by just hearing what they're saying, and don't fight back. Don't take it personally, as hard as it is to not take those like knives and daggers they're throwing at you personally. They don't mean it. They really don't. And some people say, well, if they said it, then they mean it. If they're thinking it, they're meaning it. And they're not. They're just trying to figure out what will hurt us, because they are hurting. They need us to just say, okay, all right, okay, so you hate me right now.
Yep. The validating piece. Listening and not even having to say anything. Just keep repeating yourself, like you said, listening and saying, yeah, I get it. You are angry. It makes sense you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
Keep validating what they're feeling.
Exactly. And even when he'll even say to me, doesn't it make you mad when I call you these names? Like in the throes of it. So not later when he's apologizing, but while he's doing it, because then he gets angry with me for not being angry back. He is trying to bait me and I'm not falling for it. And that's making him angrier. And I think parents can understand that too. And that's also when you break, is then they're trying so hard to pull you in. And my response is always like, yeah, it does. It hurts my feelings, but I don't get mad. I don't start yelling at him. I'm just like, yeah, you're right. It hurts my feelings when you say that.
But you don't have to retaliate.
No,
you brought up.
I want to.
Yeah.
But don't.
It's really hard not to, but you've gotten better and better and better at it.
But I do it sometimes. I don't want people to think that like this, you get here and it's perfect.
No.
I do it sometimes. There are times where I'm just like, no way. I told him before, I say, you know, you're a jerk sometimes. Like there's no perfect way, but when you're building this piece that's getting really solid, you don't like cut the whole tree down when you say one of those things one time. You know what I mean? You will apologize. You should apologize later. And I do. But it doesn't ruin everything it doesn't break the foundation that we've worked on so hard, because they start to understand you're human too. That's an interesting piece that happens, is the empathy that grows from that. Mm-hmm. And then they start to feel like, okay, I see why that just made you mad.
Mm-hmm. So, and you also saying that hurt my feelings, that when they say certain things, to acknowledge that he does impact you when he says those things.
Absolutely.
But you're not going after him and retaliating.
Or telling him he's bad or bad kid and you shouldn't. I mean, it's so easy to go down that road. I've said often, and please nobody take this wrong, but once again, I want to say these things out loud so that people know they're not alone. But sometimes I've said to myself, I see why people hit their kids, you know, because they like it just, I am sitting there and I am boiling and I am so angry and I have to do like this blank face and just take it. And, you know, it boils up in there. And sometimes I just want to slug him and really be like, stop, just chill. Like I'm telling myself to chill. That's tough.
Yeah, it is hard. And it's such a process. I'm so glad that you're reminding the moms. It's not a quick fix. This Mm-mm. is a process. You have grown so much too through this whole process.
Oh, yeah.
And you tell Isaiah that often, like I'm learning right along with you.
Right.
It's not about fixing him. It's mm-hmm. about we're all growing together.
Yeah.
And that's a big paradigm shift. And our kids need to know that. Like we are figuring, as you said, human, we're figuring this out right along with you.
Right.
And sometimes we're not going to do it perfectly, but if we can go back and repair that and say, I didn't like how I responded to you in that moment, then that is going to help develop and strengthen the empathy.
Yeah.
Another thing that you brought up that I really like that I just want to just circle, so to speak, is how you reflected back and asked him how he was feeling and how he was thinking. And what happens with that is it does strengthen that emotional intelligence piece where he could say to you, I'm getting angry. Like he was able to start recognizing it in himself because you were helping him by asking good questions.
Right. And the thing is, he will even say that in a threatening way. Like you won't like it if I get angry. And I accept that as him saying it that way too. I don't have to be reactive to the fact that he's saying to me, I won't like it, you know, because sometimes I want to be like, of course I'm not going to like it. Or, you know, don't talk to me that way. You know what I mean? Like now you're trying to manipulate me. And it sounds like manipulation. And in a sense, it is manipulation because he is about to try and really bait me into an argument. So don't take the bait. You know, I mean, that's another, it's just don't take
don't
the bait.
Get hooked. They know how to throw it out, don't they?
Yeah.
They're really good at it.
Yeah. And I mean, he got to a point where he knew that I was afraid of him having a blow up. So he did use it against me. My response was still the same. You still react the same way and you still listen and you still try and draw out like, because there's a reason. Why is he doing that to me right now? Maybe he's not feeling that level of anger that really just freaked me out before, but he's still angry about something or he wouldn't be doing it. Yeah, it is. It's super important to try and get their feedback and to try and get them to reflect on how we got there. I mean, that was always the thing is, yeah, let's get through it, but let's also figure out how we got here.
Yeah.
You know, what happened? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. to not say things like, well, what happened to you? Or why did you do this? Or don't you get it? Don't you know? Like those are things that never work. Saying things like that, right? But saying things like, well, why do you think mm-hmm. I got mad about this? I mean, I will say things like, what were you supposed to do? What was the plan? I'll say things like that. How did this start? What were you doing when this happened? Those kind of things, but only because I need him to have an answer so that he says it out loud so he hears it. You know, there's no like, I mean, we have scripts and stuff for how to say things or what to ask, but the reality is what you really have to just get good at is knowing how to ask questions without accusing. That's really the piece, is that if they feel like you're accusing them, it starts all over again. If they feel like you're blaming them, it starts all over again. And blame is so damaging anyway, because as soon, you know, I see him doing it all the time and it makes me crazy. So you have to be in that place where even if it takes you a second to ask every question, because in your mind, you're rephrasing it, that's okay. You have to be quiet for a second. Just
and if
rephrase
you get it wrong, they're going to tell you.
Yeah. Right. Because things start to go downhill again.
Thank you. I love too, Jen, how you were talking about the shame piece and how you're saying out loud the things that he said to you, because moms do feel alone. I want every mom that's on here to know that you're not alone.
Absolutely.
Very important. And that this is really a process, and that at this age, our kids don't know how to process their emotions. I say that over and over and over again. They have all these emotions, and not only do they not know, and we struggle with that, right? How do we manage our emotions? Even as moms, you're saying you wanted to say X, Y, Z and knew that that wouldn't be helpful, and it's hard not to, right? So it's that much harder for them. And also then their prefrontal cortex is disconnected. You know, it's all reconnecting. So they don't have that emotional regulation.
Right. And
you're actually helping the connectivity in his brain to wire. And so let me see here. I'm just going to go over and I'm going to look. Yeah, this is so helpful. It sounds like you're telling my story. My son was adopted and getting bigger. He is 12 and refuses counseling. Okay, that's from Jennifer. I want you to speak to that, because I hear that when I work with moms, I hear that a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to get my kid to counseling. They don't want to go to counseling. They're
no.
So self-conscious, and to have somebody sit there and stare at you, I mean, it's like their worst nightmare, right?
Right.
And somebody's going to try and fix me and something must be wrong. So I love the part about how you, if you wanted to sit in the car, you had the therapist come out, but how did you get through that?
Okay. Well, so here's a trick. I pick Isaiah up from school on those days and he goes straight to the therapist. So he's in my car already. He doesn't have to, I don't have to get him in the car. That was a mistake I learned early on, is when I have to try and get him in the car, we won't ever get to the therapist. We'll spend that hour just trying to get him in the car. And it's really hard to try and get a child in a car to go to a therapist without saying negative things and hurtful things. That was a really bad place we were in for a while, until I figured out, wait a second, if I pick him up from school, he's in my car, and now we just go straight to the appointment. So you have to find someone who's got like a 3:30 or a 4:00. I mean, our appointment was like a half an hour after pickup. So we'd just go to I'd be like, where do you want to go? You want to go to Dunkin' Donuts? You want to grab something? Let's get a treat. I would let him get stuff I would never normally let him get. I would never be like, let's go to Dunkin' Donuts after school, or let's go to Dairy Queen or whatever. But I put in this little piece where we could go to Dunkin' Donuts and he could get a donut and a chocolate milk. And then we would go straight to the therapist. And then if we were sitting in the parking lot, now we had the therapist who was willing to come out to the car. So I have to be honest that that's the only way that I found that it worked. There was no other way that it worked for me. Even 3 years in, he has a new therapist now, because after he first was working with a woman and she was awesome and she got us through the anger piece, and I am so thankful for her. But now he's 14 and he wants to talk to a guy because he's got guy stuff to talk about. And so we are seeing a new person. And even though he was willing when we talked about it and he said okay and all those things, I was still nervous. So I know, and by the way, we had the same problem with piano. So piano is right after school. And then he goes to the therapist. From piano, he goes straight to the therapist. So we never go home. If we went home first for any of the stuff, he would never leave. So I haven't found anything else that works. That's what works. And the piece about having the therapist who's willing, who understands that. I mean, my feeling is if your therapist doesn't understand that, then it's definitely not the right therapist. You know, that if your therapist doesn't understand that your child is in such a place of anxiety or anger or wherever that your child is, that he won't get out of the car, when it's so common that that happens. I mean, I know that because I know you. Other moms maybe don't know that, but it is. So if that's the case, you find the person who's willing to come out to the car and just stand there if they need to. And just understand, and you don't get mad. And I mean, I've had to get out of the car. He was kicking and screaming. I'm not kidding. He was kicking my dashboard so hard, I was sure something was going to break. He was screaming. He was, I hate you. I hate you. Why are you doing this to me? You can't do this to me. You can't make me go. Like, just having a fit in the car. So I'm not even trying to say that, like, that went smoothly. Getting the donut went smoothly. And as we drove towards the appointment, he got quieter and quieter and quieter. And when we pulled in, he starts with that, "I'm not going in there. I'm just telling you right now, I'm not going in there," you know? And actually some days he would go in and some days he wouldn't. It wasn't even like once he started going in, we were over the hurdle. We were not. And there were days where he would tell me the day before, "I'm not going tomorrow. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going tomorrow. You better call her and tell her that I'm not going." It wasn't easy. It was never an easy road. Even towards when we stopped seeing her and things had improved so much, there were days he just didn't want to go. At that point, I let that happen because I felt like he was starting to understand himself more because we had been seeing her for like a year and a half at that point. So I felt like he was starting to understand what he needed. And if he had a really long, hard day, the last thing he needed was to talk about what his emotions, because he was already emotionally exhausted. So I would say okay to that. But that was a year and a half in.
And don't expect them to want to go. I think just even just accepting that they want, you can validate that. Listen and say, "I get it. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you don't want to go. And we're going to try somebody until we find somebody you really like."
Right. Right. And you know, when they say, "Well, why, I always just said, "I think that you and I don't communicate very well. And I'm guessing that if you were talking to somebody who wasn't me, you'd be more willing to talk about what's going on." You can't just ignore their questions. So you just have to find a way to respond to them where you're not blaming them. You're not saying, "Well, you get angry all the time, so we need to figure out why, or we need to get to the bottom of this," or whatever. Right. And that's exactly it, is that the point is not that. The point is having somebody who isn't a parent that you're going to fight with to have some conversations with. And we did the woman I'm talking about, she did play, her whole thing was play therapy. They would literally make crafts or play basketball or do all this stuff and talk. And the new guy that he's seeing plays video games with him. They sit and they play video games, but they're talking while they're playing video games. Yeah. You know, it's disarming. When you do that, you create this rapport with them. And once you create this rapport with them, they start to talk to you like you're a friend. And we got far fast with people who work like that.
So what are some encouraging parting words you can leave with our listeners?
I would say that we get there, you know, that I'm in a really good place with him. And I've learned to be okay with the silence. You know, I would say 90% of our moms are, "How do I get my kid to talk?" And I've learned to be okay with him not talking, which actually makes him talk. And it's not an anxious feeling anymore. In the beginning, I was anxious that he wasn't talking to me. Now I understand he needs to process. And when he's ready to talk, he will. And I feel okay with that. And the more okay I get with that, the more he talks to me. Everything about everybody and all the moms come to me to say, "What's happening?" Right? And then I'll say something like, "My kid didn't tell me that." You know, he's learned to trust me. He's learned that I won't use what he says against him, and that he will come to me with things that I'm like, "Oh crap, I can't believe he did that," or "I can't believe he wants to do that," but he's coming to me, you know? That's the light at the end of the tunnel. There is an amazing, beautiful light at the end of the tunnel, and it is that your child will talk to you. You can't force them to talk and you can't flip a switch, but you can build this foundation of trust by listening and not judging over time. And you will see a huge change. And I have seen a huge change. And my child doesn't even rage anymore at all. Not even at all. When he's angry, he'll go outside or he'll stop talking to me. But he doesn't have like these angry rages anymore. He doesn't call me names. I mean, all of that, that is gone. He's still disrespectful sometimes. I don't want people to think it's amazing and wonderful. He's still disrespectful sometimes. He's disrespectful a lot. I don't even, you know, want it. He's still disrespectful a lot, but it's different now. And it always ends in having a conversation about it. Always.
You've instilled in him that you care about how he feels, that you want to hear what he has to say, even when it wasn't pleasant, even when it was hard. that right. he felt heard and understood, and you earned his trust. Yeah. And it takes a lot of self-control not to react, not to take things personally, but to really listen rather than lecturing, giving advice, all those things we want to do when, frankly, we're scared.
Absolutely.
And we're hurt and we don't know what to do, but we're really good at lecturing and giving advice. So to step back and to listen more, it sounds so simple, but it's like speaking a different language.
And I just want to really stick this into, that goes for positive stuff as well. I mean, if you think your kid likes a girl, for instance, and you start like asking lots of questions, you can be sure that they're not going to tell you anything. And if you try and give advice, they're going to shut down. I mean, I said to Isaiah just the other day, I'm like, well, do you have her phone number? Do you want me to give you some ideas on how you can get her phone number? And he's like, no. And then he didn't talk to me about it anymore for like 2 days. He was done with me because I tried to like get in there and be part of it. And as much as I think I can think like a 14-year-old, and I'm pretty sure I can, he still sees me as mom who doesn't know anything. And I want him to open up to me. So I have to back off. If I'm super excited, he might actually like a girl that I actually like. That's great. But I have to shut up and I cannot get involved. So even with the positive stuff, you still have to not give advice and not, unless they ask for it, you have to just keep your mouth shut.
Great advice. Yep. Even with the positive stuff.
Yep.
If we get too excited, they shut down. They don't want to tell us anymore.
Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you, everybody. And reach out to us if you have any questions. So,
right.
Jen.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. And I am so glad that you joined me. Wasn't that just an awesome interview with Jen? I hope you leave today feeling encouraged and reassured and like, I can get through this. I can do this. I want to build a better relationship with my kid and to lean in and to learn how to connect and communicate and see my kid, really see who they are, seek to understand them, to be curious. And to help you with that, I would love for you to come tomorrow to our 3-day free live training. It'll be the first day tomorrow, and we're going to talk all about how to talk to our kids, how to communicate in ways where we become a safe place for them, where they feel like they can open up and talk to us. So that's tomorrow, and the next day we're going to be talking about disrespect and power struggles, and the third day we're going to be talking about how to set boundaries that work. So sign up, and when you do, you'll get the replays and a lot of other great stuff. So I would love to get to know you more. Email me if you want to connect, Cheryl at Moms of Tweens and Teens. I always love to hear from you. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next week.